KYW News Radio original podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Favorite part of my job is being around the kids, watching them accomplish things that they may not have thought they could have. Seeing their face after a win, seeing their face after they hit a PR in a weight room, seeing their face after they get an A in a math class, when they come up and tell me they got their first job, when they come back, just absolutely being around the guys is without a doubt the best part of my job.
And our guest this week is Mike Baranek. He is the head football coach at Widener. His squad coming off a solid 2023 season, went 7-3. And Mike, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I always enjoy speaking with you.
My first question, we are recording this in February. I'm curious, how long does it take you to completely kind of process the previous season? Not just from an emotional standpoint, but from a, all right, what did we do well? Where do we need work? Who's coming back? What should we focus in on recruiting? Is it kind of a sliding scale depending upon the year, or is there usually a time of year where you kind of feel like you've completely buttoned up the previous season?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. Football's funny in that it no matter how successful your season is or how unsuccessful your season is, there's this abrupt ending. So that following Monday when there isn't a game to prepare for, you're kind of, you know, a lost ball in tall weeds, so to speak. Your schedule's been all thrown off. But we have everything mapped out for our yearly plan as far as, you know, when we're getting into recruiting, when we're getting into our self-scouts and how we go about that stuff, looking back on the previous season from a roster standpoint, a schematic standpoint, how we move into spring ball, winter workouts. So that's pretty mapped out for us. We have a general idea. From a personal standpoint, I think, you know, depending on, I've been on teams that have made it all the way to the Stag Bowl. So you're talking about that Christmas break kind of resets everything for you when you get back from the new year. And then this year, just playing 1 week after the regular season in a postseason game, you kind of have that Thanksgiving break. Maybe that's the reset for me where I'll kind of step away and just be with my family for a little bit and, you know, enjoy that time and try not to bring all the work of the season home and have all that worry and or optimism for the future on your chest while you're trying to enjoy the holidays with your family. And then when that's over, we get back and right when we start into our cycle of recruiting and, you know, preparing our guys for the off season, you kind of put everything to bed and then there's a rebirth of a new team and an excitement for looking forward. So I think to answer the question, you know, I have a lot of it mapped out as far as the big stuff. From a personal standpoint, I guess it depends, you know, where it falls in the year and you know, what type of team you have. You know, through the middle of the season, you kind of know who's coming back or who's not coming back. So, you know, if you'll be young or old or starting completely with a bare cupboard, you know, so you can kind of time it up or change it within yourself. But for me, I usually, depending on how far the season goes, kind of after that first big holiday with the family and it's time to come back to work, whatever Monday that is. And then I'm ready to go.
Talk about young or old. Does the makeup of the roster dictate how you coach as far as focus, things that you can, I don't know if take for granted, but things that you can kind of expect are already going to be baked in as opposed to things you might have to teach kids of how we do things at Widener, stuff like that? Does it vary year to year or do you try to remain consistent?
We have a consistent philosophy and a culture that we believe in. Now, getting the buy-in is going to be different and there may be more teaching depending on how veteran your roster is or how young your roster is. One thing, you know, currently we've been talking about right now is we lost some really good leaders from a football team last year. We have some really good leaders who are coming back this year, but do they know how to lead? And do they know what I expect from them and what their teammates expect from them and their position coaches expect from them? And that's something that has to be taught and worked on. So we're doing a lot of leadership development and trying to, you know, pass off ownership to those guys. So it's like a revolving door. One crop of older guys leaves and the next guys are kind of ready there to take the torch of the things that have worked. But year to year, depending on who that person is or who that group of people is, their personalities are different. Their approach to it is different. But if we can get the same end result, get the complete team buy-in, you know, the expectation on how we're supposed to handle our business in the community, in the classroom, in the weight room, on the field, and empower them to lead and give them some techniques to lead, then you can develop some really good leadership, you know, and that changes. So those type of things are really what I think on a year-to-year basis can change and differ in the way I deliver a message or my philosophy or how often I'm relying on the guys within the locker room. But you eventually want to get to the point where you're building up enough leadership skills in those guys that the best teams are led from within, and they kind of echo the message of from the top all the way down. And, you know, last year, quite a few times there wasn't much for me to say or things that I need to say. It was handled by guys who understood the expectations. And you're just trying to foster that all the time. But I think it's a skill. I think it's something you can definitely develop. And we practice it just like we practice tackling or throwing a pass or catching a pass. We practice the qualities of being a strong leader.
How much does that factor into your recruiting? How much can you kind of project what a kid's leadership skill is going to be at 16, 17, when we're all nuts at that age? And, you know, I would imagine it can be sometimes difficult to kind of think, well, this kid, in addition to being what we need in the defensive backfield, has kind of the makeup that we think will be a leader. Is that something that you feel like you can look for even at that young age?
Yeah, I think here at Widener, just we dive a lot deeper into what's taking place on your film, your highlight film or your game tape. We're really going to take the time to go meet with coaches, you know, talk to them how they were coming up through high school. Was this a guy that was always on time? Was this a guy that you would consider reliable? Was this a guy that showed leadership skills that we're looking for, whether it be on the field, in the weight room, in the class, throughout high school? And we build that report on those young men that come in here. And then when we visit and we meet with the family, you know, how do they treat their little brother in the cafeteria when he's there with them and he can't reach up and put his tray away? Does he grab that tray from his little brother and help him out and not worry about what everybody's doing or looking at him? You know, does he open the door for his grandma? Those type of things, that character type of stuff, there's some tells throughout the recruiting process that we certainly put a lot of value on. Because at the end of the day, when we're in a pressure cooker situation on a Saturday, we want to go out there with the best people. Win, lose, or draw, we're going to do it with the guys that we think do everything the right way. And we try to put a lot of value and emphasis on who we bring up here from a people standpoint first, the person he is, the student he is, and then the football player he is. And you know, obviously the football side of things is important. We want a guy who can play, but we're also football coaches. That's my job, to develop him and make him a better player. And it's to make him a better person and make him a better student. So you want to have that foundation in all three of those aspects of their life prior to coming in. And then it gives you a pretty good, pretty good starting point to grow that person.
Five seasons as head coach, getting ready for your sixth. Do you feel like you've completely got your arms around the job, or is it always something that if I checked in with you every month, there would always probably be something that you would say, well, for the first time I had to deal with this, or boy, I didn't see this coming? Or, you know, do you feel like you've got a really good, and I'm kind of talking past the football, you've obviously had success, yeah, wins, loss, stuff like that, but everything that comes down the track as a head coach of a 100 kids that are going through their college life, do you feel like you have your arms around it?
I would say this, no. and I don't, I would say I'm more equipped, and every day becoming more equipped to handle the things that change on a dime. I'm a very active learner, a very active listener. I don't like to be static in my own life and in my own development. So I don't really say, I stop saying, well, I've seen it all. You hear people say that, well, I guess I've seen it all now. No, I haven't, because every day, every week, something new comes across your plate. And I just am a firm believer that once you think you have it all figured out, man, that's when you're going to miss that new pitch that's being delivered to you, not get your bat on it. So I want to make sure I'm ahead of the curve. And if I don't have an answer for it, I'm using all the resources that Widener affords us, our alumni network, our administration, professors. There's so many people here to learn from, fellow coaches, and I try to soak it up every day. So, no, to answer your question, Matt, I don't come into work going, I got all the answers, and I probably never will. And I think the moment that I get to the point that I feel like I have all the answers, then maybe that's the moment that everything's passed me by. I don't want to be in that moment either. I want to be a constant learner.
So now let's dig in a little bit of your story. Growing up, was it football all the time, or were you playing whatever was happening?
No, man. Matt, I grew up playing every sport. It was season to season. So, you know, in the fall, it was football. Played football from flag football at 4 or 5 years old all the way through college. It was baseball, you know, started off in T-ball and Little League, Connie Mack, American Legion, played in high school and basketball, you know, transitioning into basketball, playing for CYO teams and rec league teams. And so I was kind of a sports guy, you know, and, you know, what I was street hockey with the kids in the neighborhood or anything that was going on. I was playing every sport all year long growing up as a kid. I was something I loved. I was, you know, into all of them, into every sport. I could, you know, name the players and follow the teams. And it was just something that was, you know, that was my hobby, I guess, being involved as an athlete and a fan. And yeah, so I did everything, fall, winter, spring, summer, just a revolving door of one thing to the next, and did that my whole childhood.
When did the focus start to really hone in on football?
Yeah, I think I grew up in a town that, you know, was unique to the football world. I grew up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I grew up right on the border of Montgomery and Bucks County on County Line Road, and was surrounded growing up by the Central Bucks West High School dynasty and their coaches, guys that played through that program who are now in the National Football League or went on to coach in Division I football. The high school coaches and middle school coaches I had were all incredible men, and they helped mold my life and shape me, and they were the guys that I gravitated towards. So I think at a young age, I knew that I wanted to be involved in sports as long as I possibly could. And then when I had the opportunity to go away and play in college, that's kind of really where it was, okay, this is something that I possibly want to pursue to do for a living. My head coach, Jim Clements, who's now the head coach at Kutztown University and is coming off an incredible season, was instrumental in that. And he's a Widener grad. And I just, you know, every player at the end of every season has exit meetings with their coaches. And early on in your career, those exit meetings are, hey, this is where we see you. These are the things you need to do to become a better player and help our team be more successful. And then as you start going, you know, towards graduation, they kind of turn into more of a personal talk. And Coach Clem was talking with me and said, hey, Mike, you know, we're getting towards the end of this thing. What would you like to do? What are you going to use your degree for? What are your plans after college? How can I help you? And I said, Coach, you know, I want to coach football. I want to be like you. What do I do? And I was blessed and lucky enough to be surrounded by him and Duke Greco, who we competed against here at Del Valle, as my offensive coordinator. And I worked for him. And Coach Clem gave me a graduate assistance job working for Duke, and got to see Coach Manlove, a Widener legend, every single day as a player, and then now as a coach, and got to see how he approached the game. And it was just became a really, really, you know, hit home that this is my calling. This is what I want to do. And I just was a sponge, man. I went in there with those guys at that time and didn't really say much. I remember my first day in the office, and I had always been speaking with Coach Manlove, and it's the best piece of advice he ever gave me. I said, Coach, well, you know, now that I'm on the staff, what should I do? And he walked over to the whiteboard and he drew a big, big smiley face looking thing on the whiteboard. And it had two big eyes on it and had two big ears. And on the mouth, he drew an X. And he said, do that for the next couple of years and you'll be all right, Mike. And I said, okay, I get the message, Coach. I hear it loud and clear. And that's what I did. I sat in there and I listened to him. I listened to Coach Clem. I listened to Coach Duke, and I watched how they coached. I watched, you know, developed my pedigree, my pedagogy for teaching through watching them, and it's been beneficial. And then I had the opportunity to, you know, continue on and go do the same thing, working under Andy Talley of Villanova and all those guys, and seeing Coach Ferrante and you know, Andy and all those guys, how they worked at a higher level, and tried to soak up as much information as I could. And then, you know, I kind of guess, you know, for me, what felt like a bigger break in my career was when I ended up down in Texas and got a chance to work for the University of Mary Hardin Baylor and Pete Fredenberg, and, you know, who in my opinion is, you know, other than Nick Saban, he's the best college football coach in the world. And to see how he runs his program, to see how he's a servant leader. And it was really taking all the information from the people, the good and the bad that I liked, and then seeing somebody go, wow, that aligns with my morals and my values and what I want to do. And Pete was just so instrumental in my career, and had a wonderful experience down there. And when you're 2,000 miles away from home, there's nothing else for me to do down there than sit there and utilize Coach Manlove's advice and continue to be a sponge. And man, I learned a lot of football and met a lot of great people. And that's kind of my path into this world of coaching. So
now, when you played, in retrospect, do you feel like you looked at the game like a coach? Do you think you were seeing things from a coach's eye, or did you just have like, it'd be fun to coach, I'd like to coach, and maybe you weren't really kind of seeing things that way yet?
No, I obviously I didn't see things with the coach's eye because I didn't know as much as them, you know, and I think you have to have some humility when you get into this and realize you may know football or think you know football or play football, but until you're around guys who do this, you know, 24/7, 365, you have so much to learn. But I always found enjoyment in the installations when we got our game plan that week. I enjoyed why we're running this play, you know, hearing Coach Greco say, hey, Mike, we're blocking this way because of X, Y, and Z. That was the stuff that always caught my attention and I enjoyed. And I took, you know, tons of notes and just, you know, enjoyed that part. The preparation part of the week of football was great, you know, and then that's kind of, I guess, so I was looking maybe more from that angle as a coach than maybe some of your teammates who are out there. Hey, just tell me my responsibility and coach me up on the individual technique side of it, and I'm going to go execute it. I always like to know the why, you know, and it was fun to hear that from them. And that was part of the messages that I, you know, maybe paid a little bit more attention to. Hey, we're trying to exploit this defense in this situation because we see X, Y, and Z, and it helped me learn football from a different angle. So I guess, you know, I, from a coach's perspective at that point when I was playing, no, I wasn't prepared to go in there and add my two cents to the game plan, but I always enjoyed, you know, learning why we were doing the things we were doing. And you know, I was just inquisitive about that.
And you were a tight end, right?
Yes, sir. Yep. So I played tight end. So, you know, for me, that was the perfect position, you know, I mean, other than being the quarterback, I guess you would, you know, a tight end is, I got to spend half of my day, you know, with the offensive linemen, you know, and I coached offensive linemen, you know, in my career, and my experience at tight end being down there in the sled and in the chutes and talking about the blocking schemes and the techniques and our footwork and our eyes and our hand placement. Those were things I learned as a player. And then half the other side of practice, you'd be over there with the skill guys running 7-on-7, learning how to get open and how to work on different releases and catching the football and why we're running this combination of routes. So I think I got it from multiple perspectives, and then just the body type and the athlete type that is a tight end, you get the opportunity to play on a lot of different special teams. So you get to kind of hear the third aspect of the game when you're sitting in a special teams meeting. So you get a little bit of the best of both worlds. So I'm biased. You know, I love the tight end position. I think those guys make some darn good football coaches if they want to pursue it in their career, because they get to hear a lot of football from multiple different perspectives. They have to wear multiple hats. You got to block like a lineman. You got to catch the ball like a receiver. You got to run like a back when you have it in your hands. There's a lot of different things you have to do. You have to know how to tackle because you might be called upon to cover a kick or a punt. So I think it's a unique position that allows you at a young age to be exposed to a lot more teaching, which helped me for sure.
From your playing days, you went to Archbishop Wood for high school and then Del Valle. What are some of your favorite memories?
Wow. Oh, man, I got a ton of them. First and foremost, the guys, man, that's part of the reason it keeps you in it as a coach. You love the locker room. You love the camaraderie. You love the practices, just being around the guys and being a part of a team. It's the best thing in the world. I tell our guys all the time, and I hope if you speak to some of the other guys that were my teammate, the greatest compliment I could ever get was he was a great teammate. That means the world to me more than wins and a championship or statistics. And I take away those memories from high school. Man, I remember a lot of stuff. I remember our football team at Archbishop Wood, believe it or not, wasn't very good for a long time in the Philadelphia Catholic League. And we took some beatings as a young guy. I remember, you know, Curtis Brinkley running wild on us our junior year. And I remember playing Maurice Stovall at Carroll, and they put 77 points up on us. And he was electric and went on to the NFL. And they beat us, man. They beat us bad. And we were licking our wounds. But my senior year, we had a group of guys that we just weren't going to lose. We were tired of getting pushed around. And we ended up going undefeated and winning the Philadelphia Catholic League Blue Division Championship, and coming back and having some of those great wins my senior year and getting to celebrate that with those guys was awesome. And people wouldn't believe it, but I think certain teams just have a special quality about them when you're getting ready to be on the brink of winning a championship. If you would have came into our offseason weight room or out there in training camp and said, how are you guys going to be this year? It would. Every guy on our team would have said, we're going to win every game and win the championship. And everybody in the city of Philadelphia would have laughed at us going, these guys are delusional from what happened the past couple of years. But we believed it. And it's something, a lesson that I learned, you know, now as a coach, that belief in what you're doing and having that self-confidence can take you a long way. And that was a special group of guys, you know, and that's a real fond memory that I have of playing there at Archbishop Wood. And the coaches were great and my teammates were great. The school was great. And it's just been a blessing now, you know, for the last, gosh, like 15, 20 years to see what that program has become. So they do a tremendous job, and seeing them win state championships, and it's really cool and a proud moment, because I remember, you know, I remember losing 77-0. And I remember getting beat up pretty bad by those guys. And we like to think that our class, you know, who isn't going to garner the attention of the classes after that, we had a big piece in that, in turning around, you know, what Archbishop Wood football is. And we take pride in that. And, you know, so that's a great memory. And then at Del Valle, man, so many great memories. It's different, college football, man, being a part of playoff teams, your first time away from home, you're being with the guys and that bonding experience, watching some of the guys that I coached and, you know, played with now go on and have successful coaching careers and get their opportunity. I'm just proud of that group of guys. We won a lot of football games together, played in a lot of good football games together. So I have a lot to be proud of from there. I'd say my fondest Del Valle memory, I guess, man, you know, just again, just being with the guys, you know, I get to, there's a guy who's a defensive coordinator in our league that I compete against every year. We played next to each other in the huddle, and getting to see him and hug him before a game and after a game, that's special. You know, our quarterback is the new head coach at Del Valle, you know, and I'm proud that he's there leading that program, and we're going to compete like hell against each other, man. There's no doubt about it. But at the end of the day, we both walk across that field and we, you know, been through battles together and have a great respect for each other. And I just think that was cultivated there through the coaches that we had and the program that we had. You know, it was a great experience, man. I love my time at Del Valle. And I would say the people, more so the people, is my greatest memory from there.
Time to take a break on One-on-One. More with Widener University head football coach Mike Baranek coming up. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Widener University head football coach Mike Baranek. Now, did you get hurt late in your career at Del Valle?
Yeah, I did. And that's probably, you know, another, you know, so at the end of my career, going into my final season, I got injured at a pretty serious injury to my neck. And that's kind of where, you know, some of those exit meetings with Coach Clem, you know, it was time for me to kind of hang it up. And I was able to go into, you know, the coaching world and really start my next journey in the game of football. And the coolest thing about that, Matt, and just to tell you why I say the people as my fondest memory, was he said, okay, Mike, like, you know, you can't play anymore. That's fine. But we've talked about you coaching. There's the opportunity right now to join the staff. We'd love to have you. And, you know, I went right in and started coaching the tight ends. So now I went from playing with some of those guys who were playing alongside of me or were a backup to now I'm their coach. And that could have went one of two ways when you're sitting there as a guy that, you know, man, we did the college thing together and now I have to be somewhat of an authority figure. Those guys were buttoned up, man. They showed me the same respect that they showed Coach Clements and Coach Greco, Coach Manlove. And that really helped me sharpen my teeth and find my voice. So I was able to sit in there and be Coach B, not Mike, to the guys anymore. And that was, I when I see those guys, that's probably the biggest thing I can thank them for is treating me like a coach early on in my career and allowing me to find my voice really helped catapult me to where I am today. And, you know, I think it goes back to what I talked to my team about of being a great teammate. When you're a great teammate to those guys and they're a great teammate to you and everybody knows what everybody's personal goal is or what they want to achieve, you know, guys toe the line and do the right things and give you their best every single day. And they certainly did that for me when they could have came in there and just, you know, it'd have been a hangout session and it wasn't, you know, it was just like any other coach was coaching them. And I was able to grow and grow pretty quickly. And I credit a lot to those guys, man, for being pros and being professionals and handling their business the right way. So
having that neck injury, how difficult was it emotionally to maybe kind of come to grips that you weren't going to play anymore, but did having that door immediately open where you're staying, not just staying in the sport, but staying in the program, staying with the guys that you love, how much maybe did that kind of soften the edge of that? Because that's got to be that's a difficult time for any athlete when you have to come to grips with this is over.
Yeah, no, it was brutal. I mean, to be honest with you, it was hard. I mean, you love playing. And my first season there as a coach after that injury, we won the conference and we got into the playoffs. And it was, I don't think about it often, but you brought it up. We end up losing to Albright College in the playoffs. We had beaten them a couple weeks prior and beat them pretty good. And they came out to Doylestown and, they were running that amoeba defense. Nobody was putting their hand in the ground. It wasn't any of the same pictures we had seen on film at all. It was a credit to their coaching staff and their players, a tremendous game plan, and they beat us. And I took that loss like a player. Like, I sat there in the fourth quarter like, man, like, I should be out there. Like, I should be out there helping my guys. Like, they need me. And that was hard. That probably was when it became final for me. Because Coach Clem gave me the opportunity to really fire me right in there in spring football after the injury. And I was coaching and, laser focused on being a coach. And like I said, at the beginning of this conversation, football has that abrupt, finite ending moment. That was my guys. That was my senior class of teammates that I was standing there coaching, but watching out there going, man, if this didn't happen, I'd be out there and this outcome would be different. I'd be helping my buddies. And that's what hurt me. And that took a little bit to get over. I still get emotional talking about it, but it's why I love football. You know, it's you're always a part of it and you always think about your teammates and you think about your team. And it wasn't the initial injury and missing right away and then getting into that wasn't what made it final for me. The hardest pill to swallow was that I should have been out there with those guys if this didn't happen to me, but things happen for a reason, you know, and I gave them my best in a different realm that year coaching. But I was young at the time. I was 21 years old at the time and looking out there in the third quarter when late third quarter, you know, late fourth quarter, and you're going, we're not going to come out on top today. That's when you start that wave of emotion kind of comes over. You start thinking about the what ifs, you know, and you wear it like any other loss. And then you end up getting over it and moving on. But that's probably the moment it became final for me that, hey, playing days are over, but you're a coach now. And the best thing you can do for everyone is do your best every day as a coach and a teacher.
How much do you think the experience of the injury has made you a better coach from the standpoint of you maybe have stuff in your empathetic toolbox for kids that are going through not just injury, but going through things where a lot of times if you haven't experienced something like that, where it's been taken away, there might be a knee jerk to say, all right, well, let's get back out there, or where you might be able to connect and say, listen, I get it. Here's what we're going to do. Do you feel like it rounds you off as a coach?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do. I don't think it's just my experience though. That's one element of it. It's the other coaches that I've had who've done a great job of that too. But I really try to take into consideration, you know, that moment in my life and how hard that was. And I think a lot of times coaches say, oh, we have an open door policy in our program. If you ask our players, that's true. Like, I sit with my guys all the time. I speak with my guys all the time. And it's not necessarily about football. It most of the time, it's about other things that are going on in their life. I want to be an active part of their life. You know, I want to know their brothers and sisters and their moms and dads and, you know, what makes them happy and what makes them sad. And I want to guide them not only being the best player they can be, but I had people in my corner that when I told them this is what I want to do for a profession, they helped me. Nobody gets to where they really want to be without some help and some luck and all those type of things. So I try to be there and be there for those guys and be a network for them and do it in a professional manner. You know, while you're here, I'm coach and I'm going to coach you hard in between those white lines to be the best player you can be. But outside of those white lines, my job doesn't stop because we want to have the best players in our program. Then we need to have the best people in our program. And we work on fostering those relationships all the time. So I do believe some of the things that I've been through from an injury perspective in football do give me a little bit of a perspective that, hey, there's more important things than just what's taking place for 3 hours every Saturday. That will take care of itself if we are handling all the things in life are in a line with our goals. And I try to be there for our guys as much as I can. So yes, I think I pull from that experience on a daily basis.
As an aside, Widener, Del Valle, heated rivals. You mentioned the Keystone Cup earlier. It's one of the great football rivalry games. I'm curious, because you had a couple of years at Widener as an assistant before you took over the program. The first couple times you played Del Valle, was it just weird? Or did you have enough years where you mentioned Villanova, Murray? You were at other places where you still loved Del Valle, but it wasn't that immediate going across the sideline? Because I would imagine the first couple times it just has an odd feeling of going against a program that meant so much to you.
Yeah, it's weird, but yeah, it is. I mean, but at the same time, it's competition. You know, I think that's the I learned how to be a competitor there, and you know, so make no bones about it. When we play that game, we want to win, and they know that, and I know that they want to win. What people don't know is, like, you know, 24 hours prior to kickoff, you know, I have phone conversations with Greg Fiedek and Duke Greco. They're still my coaches, you know, my mentors, guys that are, you know, our relationship for that 4 hours of button heads and a heated rivalry, that's what it is. It's 4 hours of man-on-man competition, and they've had the upper hand for quite a while now, and credit to them. But we're not going to stop, you know, attacking, trying to win that game until we get it. And they know that. But outside of that, if people can see the rivalry, you know, you do realize how closely it intertwines, Widener and Del Valle. It's almost, you could do a whole podcast and bring in about 20 people or more that have really, really strong connections to both programs. And that's from Coach Manlove to Coach Clements to Coach Fiedek to myself. There's a camaraderie within that. I think it makes the rivalry even more special. You know what I mean? It's a great game against two great programs. And, you know, so is it weird? Yeah, I guess it's weird for the first 5 minutes. It's always awkward looking over there. And I'm sure Mike and I will have our awkward moment this year, like Duke and I did. Like, hey, do we shake hands right now? Or, hey, you know, I'll call you later. Do people have to see us, you know, come together and make this, you know, the culminate the day, or how's that work? But man, when that game's over, you know, it's over. We give each other a hug and tell each other we love them and wish each other good luck. And then for 364 days out of the year, they know that I'm a resource for them and they're a resource for me. And that's just you know, that's a bond that you develop when you play with guys and work with guys. So I think it's a special thing. And to steal from Coach Manlove again, I say the same thing. I will be proud of my alma mater every game except for one. Just like he says, you know, I hope Widener wins every game except for one. And that's okay, because Coach Manlove's over there wearing Del Valle green right now. So we get it. It's a special rivalry. And, you know, a lot of great coaches and a lot of great people and a lot of great men who have played for them that are invested in it. And we just we're working every day head down to, you know, to try and climb that mountain and get back there and hold that cup.
When you were offensive coordinator, take me into what makes a good play caller. How much of it is X and O's? How much of it is, for lack of a better term, vibes? How things are going? Who's playing well? Is the other team tired? Like, what goes into the whole mix? Because it's something we hear a lot about people watching the NFL talk about. You know, coordinators have become household names now because of the popularity, but because everybody thinks that they could do it. What makes a good play caller and what goes into it?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. I think a lot of the things you mentioned there do go into it. Obviously, schematics, you have to have a scheme that, number one, you believe in, because when you're teaching it to your players and it's coming from a point of belief, then they're going to buy into it and believe into it. You have to have a system that fits the talent that you have. You know, you can't try and fit a square peg into a round hole, so to speak. And then you have to have that feel. You have to have that gamesmanship of recognizing the momentum, recognizing the who's tired, who's covering who, the matchups you can get, and where you can exploit the defense. And I think the biggest thing is you got to be calling plays, you know, 2-3 plays ahead. You're setting things up. When people say you're playing the chess match, that's how I look at it. You know, why'd you run the ball there and it only gained 1 yard? Well, you know, I might be looking at the backside safety when we call that run play, and then know, hey, we got him in a formation that checks out all week. We've scouted that in this formation, in this field zone, in this down and distance, they play this coverage. This is their rotation. This is how their box is lining up. And we're confirming information as the game goes along. So then 2-3-4 plays later, we come back to it And now that backside safety who we saw trigger in the backside C gap or frontside ski gap, you know, we can pick on him and get a ball behind him. So I think there's a lot that goes into, you know, not necessarily the outcome of every individual play, but the whole process. How are they playing that chess match and how are they dissecting the defense? And that's what we do. We try our system here is, you know, it's going to be predicated on what we're getting. You know, we're going to try and dictate the pace to our defense based off of the structure, you know, and we study that structure of their defense and what they're doing in many different varieties. And we're going to try and go attack that when the opportunities present itself. And by attacking that, we may have to set certain plays up to be explosive and make that big play. So I think being a great offensive coordinator is a mixed bag of having a scheme you believe in. So when you're teaching it, guys find that belief in themselves, pairing that schematics with the talent that you have on your roster to put your players in the best situations possible to find success, the ability to adjust and change and adapt when those pictures don't match up that you've changed all week, and then the ability to set your plays up and be able to be explosive and put the ball in the zone when you need to. And then with that comes a level of creativity, and that's the fun part about it. You can be creative and design stuff, but you don't want to get too wordy or put too much in. You got to be able to execute the things you want. So I think being an offensive coordinator it's a darn tough job, but it's fun. It's super fun to call those plays and be out there, but you got to have a mixed bag for sure.
You mentioned things not matching up to the picture you'd seen all week. And you mentioned that playoff game where I think it was Albright played that amoeba defense, and that was not something that was on the radar. How often does that happen in general, where a team comes out, and I don't mean just one play, but I mean where they come at you with something that you didn't work on because there was no reason to work on it, because there was no indication that that was going to be in play? How often does it happen, and what is the visceral feel as a coach when that happened? Because me personally, it would be like this combination of dread, panic, and a challenge.
Yeah. It happens. I mean, it happens, I would say, less frequently what Albright did to us, where it's a complete every formation. They completely that day changed their defensive picture for the last 11 weeks. That's doesn't happen as often. Not saying it couldn't happen, but you'll see it quite frequently based off of formation. So that's where the self-scout and self-evaluation comes in. You know, are we living in this formation so much that now teams are going, hey, they're going to play, you know, 50% of their snaps out of this offensive formation. So we're going to have 3, 4, or 5 different wrinkles or one different wrinkle that they've seen. You have to be aware of that. You have to have some self-accountability to make sure that you're not patterning out as an offensive play caller. Now, as an offensive guy, there's some things when you're in that situation that you can do to combat that you have in your base arsenal. So by putting formation into the boundary, you know, putting 3 receivers tight to the tight side of the field, that causes a structural problem for the defense right away that they may have a master check for it. They may be scrambling around, and we can run some basic stuff off of that so we can get a feel of, you know, that we don't have to go into full panic mode. We can start drawing stuff up and building some in-game adjustments and tendencies. It could be as simple as hopping a back from the left side to the right side of the quarterback and get you a different tell, utilizing your motions and trades and shifts. So there's things we can do to combat that, you know, from an offensive perspective. So, but yeah, I mean, when it first happens, if you got a big game plan build up and you don't work on, you don't have a system that you believe in where you can call some of your base stuff out of different formations every single week, and you're stuck in these 50, 60 new creative plays, sure, I could imagine that would be a very, panic might start to set in right there. But so we have some day one camp stuff that, you know, we could pull out of our bag at any time to kind of settle things down and try and start building those looks and pictures off of it. And then we have some, you know, every team has some options of, you know, putting formation into the boundary or going unbalanced or adding an extra lineman in there or, you know, going off script. You know, we're a spread team. You know, there's been games we've came out and started in pro personnel and put a fullback on the field. So the defense is probably like, whoa, okay, we haven't seen that. But a defensive coordinator goes, okay, it's I formation, dot formation, pro formation. We have a master check for that. their defense goes into a master check mode. So that's the chess match of you have to be prepared for everything. You can't prepare for everything. You can't be prepared for all the things to happen at once. So you got to have a little bag of tricks that are yours, that are your day one bread and butters, that no matter what they present to you, you feel comfortable getting yourself out of a game or getting yourself out of a drive until you can regroup again. But yeah, I mean, shoot, Matt, there's so many things that happen in a game. All emotions run through you. Panic, nerves. Oh boy, what's going to happen now? I mean, that happens to everybody. I guess it happens to me. So I hope it happens to everybody.
Practice or game, what do you prefer from a coaching standpoint?
Oh man, now you put me on the spot. So the coaching political answer is practice. We love the preparation and all that. I do love that. There's nothing in the world like game day. So if anybody's sitting out there telling you they don't love game day, I don't know, man. I love game day. All right. But I know to get to game day and have the success that we want to have on game day, I've got to enjoy the process and enjoy the journey. And I do enjoy that. But man, that band's going, you're walking through the tailgaters, you smell the burgers on the grill, and there's another team coming in from out of town with bad intentions. There's nothing like that. There's nothing like game day. So I love game day.
Love to win or hate to lose? Which resonates with you more?
I think I hate to lose more. I think I hate to lose more. That's the one that, and the reason I say I hate to lose is you look back at a football game, there's four or five plays that dictate the outcome. And when you're sitting in the catbird seat, you're going, okay, well, what could I have done differently to prepare us for that moment? So I think it stings a little bit more, you know, on those losses. However, I love to teach. People say you can teach and learn a lot off of a loss. Off of a loss, my philosophy is, yes, we're going to teach and learn from our mistakes, but I'm going to be a lot maybe more sympathetic and empathetic with the guys. After we win, they're the Tuesday practices here at Widener that they're challenging now. We're not going to sit here and act like we accomplished something so magical that everybody else isn't doing. So you can really get after guys after a win and get even better off of that. So, you know, I think there's many ways to skin the cat, but I do love teaching off a win because I can go back to a little bit more old school football coach. Let's get after it and grind this week. We haven't arrived and done anything. Whereas after a loss, there's a lot of things going through your head. Let's keep the locker room together. Let's make sure everybody's healthy. Let's not let panic set in. Let's let them see that we're stoic, during a time of where inside, yeah, man, we could be a little panicked. So yeah, you know, I love it all.
Given everything we've talked about, favorite part of your job?
Shoot. Favorite part of my job is being around the kids, being around the guys, watching them accomplish things that they may not have thought they could have. Seeing their face after a win, seeing their face after they hit a PR in a weight room, seeing their face after they get an A in a math class, when they come up and tell me they got their first job, when they come back, you know what I mean? The guys, just absolutely being around the guys is without a doubt the best part of my job.
Mike Baranek, this was so much fun. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, Matt, anytime.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Widener University head football coach Mike Baranek for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.